Hello friends, and welcome to the Season 3 Q&A. Just in case you've managed to get here without realising this already, I'm Hero, the creator of Monstrous Agonies, and I was answering your questions with Sophie B, who plays the understudy. As always with these Q&As, we were not recording under strict studio conditions, so please interpret this sound quality generously.
Let's go, let's go! Here we are for the last time. What I really love about this Q&A, the last one, is that you've sent me the questions, and finally, here at the final frontier, you have arranged the questions for me into some semblance of order and category, so I don't have to do it.
Well, I've been taking responsibilities away from you slowly all season. So
in order to prove that I have less worth than you, and so you get more in the divorce.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm, so I can be like, oh, honest, Your Honour, they don't even do anything. They didn't even order the cues for the Q&A, let alone
have their own episode or anything. No.
Look, in fairness, I fully intended for you to have your own episode, but then I don't know what I did to my spreadsheet this season, but I f***ed it. It's the only way I can describe what happened to my careful... Like, I was like, okay, it's the last season, you're going to sit down and do your spreadsheet and you're going to, like, plot it and it's going to make sense and there's going to be an understudy episode in the usual place because that's great and we love that. And all of these, like, plot beats are going to happen in sensible places and I know what those are and it's going to be great. And then it just all sh** the bed, really.
It did all go a bit out the window, didn't it?
Very quickly and irrevocably out the window. Like, it wasn't on the windowsill, it was gone. It was down on the garden, running across the lawn towards the trees. It was
eloping with its childhood sweetheart.
It was. Oh, it f***ed.
Yeah. Come on, I'm going to moderate you now. I'm going to mod you so hard and we're going to go into that first question. So this comes from Alex, and first of all, they just want to know, how are you, Hero?
I'm pretty good, thanks, Alex.
Yeah, they want to know how I am, and I'm pretty good as well.
Wow, we're doing great.
Isn't that great? And they also want to know if we remembered to drink water today. Have you drank some water today, Hero?
I did. I'm drinking some water right now with my other mouth that is not in front of the microphone. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How about you, Sophie? Hydrated?
I am. I drank some water at work. And then, yeah, and then I had a Bellini when I got home, which probably has some water in it somewhere.
When I was visiting you was when I realised that a Bellini is not a small pancake.
No, sweetheart, no. Almost, but not quite.
Almost? Oh. I think I'd prefer the pancake, to be honest.
Do you want to talk about your podcast for a bit?
I'd love to. If only I had some questions to prompt me.
Well, luckily for you, people listened to this podcast you made, and they want to know things about it. Caspian wants to know, so what was your favourite part of the creation of the podcast? It acknowledges that a lot of people say that their favourite part of podcasting is working with other people, but you, quite infamously, hardly worked with anyone making this. So was there some other element of making it that stuck out to you as a favourite bit?
Yeah, this one made me laugh because obviously I know that I make Monstrous Agonies, but the idea that I made it on my own is ridiculous. Because my favourite part of making this podcast has been working with other people. It's just that the other people have been all of the listeners. But genuinely, the bit that really, like, lit me up and I was amazed and that made me go, oh, wow, this is something special, was the response from listeners to the submissions and to having that opportunity to sort of build this world and this story with me. So this podcast is mostly just you. It's not really. I mean... You know, I'm the conduit, but when I look at my precious spreadsheet, it's so packed with submissions and with letters and with ideas from other people Yeah, that it's that. Honestly, it's been that collaborative creation.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, it's fully just been such a collaborative process for you. And I know that you're very, as someone who has edited various things for you, you have generally always been very fun to collaborate with. So, and I think that's because of how much fun you find. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It is like, there's very few things that I've ever created that I've been like, I on my own can do this. Creating a whole like 3 years of a world. Like, I don't think I could do that on my own. Like, I got a big brain. It's not that big.
Quite a few of your listeners want to know kind of the question that always gets asked during things like this, which is, do you have a particular favourite episode from this season?
The babiest baby of all time. Who doesn't want to grow up because then she'll stop being a creature. That was great. I loved that. It's also hard because, like, favorite episode, like, I tend to think of them in letters rather than whole episodes. I'm trying to think. What did I do?
Honestly, like, I think the final showdown with the CEO, like, I think we like slightly different things out of fiction. I'm like, I want to know what those characters are doing. Whereas I think you like it sometimes when the narrative's a bit like, ooh, a bit wibbly and kind of going off in weird directions. And so I think for me, especially because like we had a lot of chats about like, well, what's going on with this character and what do they actually want and why are they such a big shithead and all that sort of thing. And so having that come to that final confrontation and kind of having all those lovely through lines and like the map of it all. And I just think it was a really well done confrontation without it being, because I know that you were like, the presenter's not going to fight them. Like, it's not going to be like, it's not going to be some huge battle at the end of the world. Like, that's not who they are and that's not what this is.
It's one radio station standing up for.
Yeah.
It's morals. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know.
I think it had enough successful stakes and drama and tension while also not suddenly taking us into a whole different genre.
I tell you, my favourite bit of that was the presenter being like, oh my God, you pay for good reviews? Yes. That's pathetic.
Yeah.
Of just being like, oh, you're, because we knew you were horrid and mm-hmm. we assumed mm-hmm. you were stupid. But you're also really sad.
Yeah.
I texted Dom after getting their audio for that. And I was like, oh, they're such a c-. You play them so well. Dom was like, thanks.
Yeah, I think that's a very high compliment.
My favorite episode, I think, might be from season 3, might be the CEO's episode.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No, that is.
It was really fun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just to sit there and be like, how do I cause the most psychic damage to the people who are expecting a nice, normal, monstrous acne episode? Oh, also I really love the season 3 finale. I think I did a really fucking good job.
You did.
And again, I think it's like very monstrous agonies. Like the fact that the two letters are like a puppy play werewolf and somebody speaking like pseudo Middle English and talking about chili heatwave Doritos, that just felt like, I was like, yeah, this is a real monstrous agonies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Ella, she specifically wants to know if you have a favourite episode of the entire show.
So I do listen to Monstrous Agonies quite often. It is my favourite podcast. I mean, it's exactly what I like.
Absolutely.
I go back to the bonus episodes quite often because I think they just, they were really indulgent, and they were just me enjoying things and doing things that I liked and thought were interesting, and then realizing that you can get actors to say anything.
Yeah.
You can make Alan Bergen say, "I love to slurp." And he just has to say that.
He just has to say it. The consummate professionals. Absolutely.
Yeah. So my favorite one of those is probably the immortal monk who is like writing his like hagiography of a saint. He's like talking to God, and oh, it's truly just me being like, wouldn't this be cool? And burbling on.
Yeah, that is very H.R. Owen. Is it a bit mortifying if I say that I think my favorite episodes are the Q&A's?
That's not mortifying.
I just think we're really fun, and I really like talking to
really
you.
Fun.
So
it's nice hanging out.
It's nice, and then I listen to them, and I'm like, "Oh, I'm hanging out with my pal." Aww. So that's nice.
Also, the season 2 finale with the AI who's raising the little mandrake.
Yes, I mean, I think the AI voice is possibly the pinnacle of your accents, like it is.
But also, I think talking episode, because the other letter in that one is the guy who's been left his uncle's not decaying body in a big coffin,
mm-hmm.
And that is like that was when I realized that all of the letter slots could be filled by submissions. I set a few aside for myself, and that was one that was like absolutely. Like hardline going in, somebody like my uncle has left his body to me, and it's weird. And I really, really love that. That's one of my favorites for sure.
So the AI, obviously, one of your top tier voices, and Paper Wizards has a whole question about that, which is, first of all, a compliment, which I see you've left in rather than just skipping to the question. The compliment is that your accents throughout the show have been phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Yeah, Paper Wizards didn't actually say that.
You just typed it up. Yeah, I knew that. But what were the hardest accents that you had to do, or were there any that you flat out refused to do, for instance?
There were. One person asked for a French accent on their letter, and I said no. I took one look at it and I was like, non.
Mais non.
Mais non. Parce que je suis shit à le France accent. So I didn't do a French accent. Somebody asked for a Brummy accent, for a Midlands accent, and I was like, I'm not doing that, because I tried to do one with Biamba the Mongolian Deathworm, who was from the Midlands, and it's fine. I don't really want to put more of my bad Brummy accent into the world.
I mean, I think considering that you, again, are a single person doing this by yourself without any sort of accent coach or anything, just with a lot of vim.
And vigour.
And vigour. Some might say vim and vigour. Taking all those things into consideration, you've done a very good job of a lot of quite tricky and very varied accents.
Yeah. I think they get less varied as they go on. I think I get quite lazy.
Well, I think going back to season one, I do think you were like, every letter, new accent, let's go, something different.
But I was also like... Also in season one, I think I was like, yeah, accents for everyone, but also hadn't quite internalized just how much you have to overact when you're voice acting.
Mm-hmm.
So like my sweet mum, I said something about like how hard it is to do the accents like fairly recently. And she went, "Oh, I didn't realize you were doing accents."
Like, oh my God,
thanks,
devastating.
Mom. Thanks, Sue! But in fairness, in quite a lot of season one...
I think a good fallback was always you were like, I'll just do it and then speed it up or slow it down. That's a new accent.
Yeah.
And you know what? It is.
And it counts. And because there's all sorts of qualities to voice that you change when you're doing voices,
mm-hmm.
right? So, like, there's accent, which is one of them. And I kind of basically just go between Northern and Southern English. Like, there's a little bit of class difference going on, but basically that's it. With a few outliers like Nessie's sister or the trans Boston lizard lady. And then there's all of these other qualities. So, like, are you breathing through your nose? Are you breathing from your chest? Are you pitching it up high into your head? Or are you speaking from, like, down in the belly? And are you going quickly or slowly? And all of these other things, you know, trying to vary that, but also realize that if I'm speaking from down in my chest and slowing it down and going Southern, I'm just doing the presenter again and I need to do something else. And, you know? But actually, I do know exactly which was the hardest one to do, and it was the Coloradan accent, because Colorado doesn't have an accent that I can tell. Maybe all of the Coloradans in the audience are really, really mad at me for saying that. But somebody was like, I love that you gave him like a bit of a twang. And it's like, I just can't do an American accent without a bit of a twang. I don't know what to tell you.
See, for me, if I try and think, okay, what do I think about Colorado? All I can think about is that vine that's like, say Colorado, then the guy skis past really quick going, I'm a giraffe. So to me
it's the line in do you know that country song where they got all the old country boys to sing about being a highwayman, that one, a place called Boulder on the Wild Colorado, and just that little bit, like Boulder on the, like I just really like that bit.
That's it. A place called Boulder, Colorado.
A place called Boulder on the Wild Colorado.
Is it a Monstrous Agonies Q&A if one of us hasn't burst into song? No.
They buried me in that great tomb that holds no sound, but I am still around.
Yeah.
I'll always be around and around.
Michael would like to know, which episode was the most fun to perform?
Baby was fun. Baby mm-hmm. creature. Mm-hmm. Trans Bostonian lizard lady and her moisturizer. Great crack. The Middle English was really hard, but really fun. And I'm like, I said to someone, I was like, they were texting me and they were like, oh yeah, you did really, really well. And I was like, I mean, it's not really authentic pronunciation. Like, I don't know how to pronounce Middle English. And like, even the things that I did know, like I had to change it for the sake of like people who were listening who don't know. And like, I don't know if it like translates properly. And they were like, if anybody calls you on that, they are a dick. So I'm like, oh, I didn't pronounce my Middle English properly.
That kind of actually sort of comes around to a couple of questions that came from both Jan or Jan Caltrop, one of the two. I'm not sure.
I think they like that you can pronounce it either way.
Oh, I like that for them.
Yeah. It's like a reversible windbreaker. You can wear it.
It's exactly like, do you know what I was thinking when I was thinking about how you can pronounce it either Jan or Jan? I was thinking, God, do you know what? This is literally exactly like a reversible windbreaker. That was the first thing that popped into my head. I think about windbreakers quite a lot as someone who really loves practical fashion. Yeah, it's and I love actually
and I'm sure windbreaker is the word that you use for your windbreaker or anorak, perhaps cagoule. Words for people
to say. A windbreaker, an anorak and a cagoule are three completely different pieces of clothing.
Okay, we have to move on.
Windbreaker and a cagoule. Oh, do we? Now that I'm getting impassioned about something.
They're the same.
They're not.
They're the same.
No, they're not. No, okay. So both Jan and Mythic Menagerie have a couple of questions regarding research. So obviously, doing the Middle English episode, you will have fallen down one of your typical research holes, because I know
I love the hole.
You love to research. So Mythic Menagerie wants to know about some of the fun things that you learned about researching for the show. And Jan wants to know sort of, you know, is there something that you maybe didn't end up using, but kind of was like, oh, that's interesting. And then you were disappeared down a Wikipedia rabbit hole for 5 days.
Yes. I have no satisfying answer for this because I go down research holes so often and so deeply that I have no real way of discerning which were monstrous agonies related and which weren't.
Yeah, it's every single day with you. It's at the drop of a hat. Like, you just...
Yeah, I think So also, because for me, research is like my starting point. Like, I find it really, really, really hard to write if I don't have, I kind of need to have the scene set quite well for myself already. Like, I remember last season, someone was an underground creature who had evolved to not be able to see above ground. So naturally, before I could start writing, I had to go and research different kinds of cave creature and different kinds of animals that have evolved to not have eyes or to have vestigial eyes or to have eyes that work completely differently than us or that have all of these different senses that help them move around in a place where there just isn't any light. And only like half a sentence of that actually went into the letter, but I needed it so that the person who had written the letter could feel like a real person and could feel like a real problem. And also could feel like a real creaturely problem.
Yeah, you don't want to fall down the kind of like the, what I would call the Zootopia trap, as it were, where it's like, where it's like, this is about racism. And then you get a bit further into the film and you're like, this is...
It's bad if that's about if racism.
It's not. And it's the idea, I think, yeah, as you said, like so many of the letters start out as... sort of a one-to-one real world metaphor.
And then, and you know, even so there's the researching things so that the monsters feel real. Then there's like, so Mythic Menagerie, actually, I think it was them who wrote in, a letter about a shapeshifter who also has dissociative identity disorder. Mm-hmm. And that was so great to have the opportunity to actually go and learn about DID and then to learn about like different kinds of plurality, different kinds of systems, different ways that DID can look for different people and that that's not the only way that people can be plural and all of these things. So the research is a really nice way to sort of ping off from that and go, yeah, what is it actually? What is it like if you're a refugee and you've just moved here? What do you have to worry about, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, this is for a letter about someone who's falling in and out of time, but let's not sort of use it as an opportunity, but also sort of use it as an opportunity, I suppose, to sort of develop my own empathy for different people, you know?
No, I was just going to say, I think for you, researching whether it is about... finding out what particular kind of mole creature or other underground, whatever, or like about
very
real...
few of them were moles, actually.
Very few were moles. So there you go, you see. But this is because I think, so one of the questions that sort of drew my eye here when we're talking about this is, so both Chris and Teethworm say, you know, are there any stories or folklore that you sort of learned about or wanted to include that got cut for time or that you haven't used? And Ember June, they also say, you know, have you got any like letters and submissions or ideas left over? And then are you going to do anything with that? And I think obviously you can answer all of those things yourself, but I know, knowing you, anything you've put to one side or learned about is going to crop up at some point in a future project.
Yeah. Yeah. I think of it as like compost, really. Like I think it's healthy to put lots and lots of things into your compost bin. And then it mulches down and comes out in interesting ways.
I think. And just to prove how much you do composting and reusing things and stuff, genuinely think you've said that on all three Q&As now. We've talked about your mulchy compost bit.
Brain compost.
Yeah,
Put some stuff in your brain compost. It's good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess...
Are there any leftovers?
I think, yeah, surely. Like, yeah.
Well, so we have, there were five submissions specifically from Orb Warb who sent them into season one. And then I was like, cause I think Orb Warb is a they. I'm going to say they. I'm sorry, Orb Warb. Please forgive me. they sent in like a lot in season one and I used a lot of them, but I was like, oh, I'm going to try and space them out. And sure, I'll have loads of time to fit them in season two. And then loads of people submitted in season two and season three. So I have five little suggestions from Orb sitting there that will never get used. And then I still have like a full spreadsheet of ideas that I wrote out when I was first sort of coming up with Monstrous Agonies and first started thinking about what kind of letters we might use. My personal favorite is the Gestalt B consciousness, aka Hive Mind.
You're so farting funny.
So farting funny.
Yeah, but that'll crop up in something in the future. I can feel it because you're so pleased with it, so it'll show up.
I'm so pleased. Yeah, so there's tons. I don't think there's any particular stories, like plot points, because there was so little plot.
I think we had probably about maybe a few episodes into season two, you and I had a big video chat where you kind of had, and I'm sure you won't mind me telling people this, you were a little bit like, what's the story?
I had a huge flap.
You had a big flap worrying about you'd set this thing up and then you were like, but I sort of didn't really think it through. I've set up an event and then where do we go? So we had a really good productive chat and then your laptop died. And that the notes from that chat were
just gone.
Lost to the sands of time.
And that's how we ended up with such incredible plot points as a wizard did
a
it.
A wizard did it.
Oh, but how did the CEO make the static intern holding a crystal up to the radio?
But know this, listeners, there is an alternate reality in which Hero's computer never crashed and those notes stayed and you got a totally different Monstrous Agonies resolution and story.
Yeah.
But we don't live in that world. We live in this one.
We don't remember any of it.
We don't remember it. No.
I don't remember any of it.
No.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So even though we lost all of those plot points, Taze still says that the main cast in Monstrous Agonies are incredibly written and wants to know whether or not you have a particular process that you use to build characters or do you just kind of wing it as you go along?
You'll be shocked to know I wing it.
What a revelation.
What?
We could just take that soundbite and have that for all the answers just in this Q&A.
In fairness, characters I find particularly easy. Like, I find plot extremely difficult to write and to come up with, which is one of the reasons that Monstrous Agonies doesn't really have any. And any that it does have is like so character driven, you know, like only the presenter could have got themselves into that situation, you know, and only the CEO would put them there and only Mab would be mabbing about in the background.
She does love to mab about.
She does mab about, doesn't she? So I've never been someone who sits down and does, you know, I know some people like really swear by like doing questionnaires about their characters and like building them from the ground up or like starting with an archetype and moving out from there. All of mine just roll up, just sort of fully formed, you know, like the presenter. I knew who the presenter was as soon as, like, I don't, like, it's not even, it feels almost like lying to say that I made them up, you know, they were just there.
Yeah.
And then everything that happens and the way that they react to that is like, yeah, because that's what they would do.
So that's actually kind of leads us on to Ella asking, you know, did you always know that Mab and the presenter were going to have that romantic tension? Was it a plan since the beginning or did it develop over time?
It was so obvious. It was so obvious that if you put the person of Mab in a room with the person of the presenter, they would hate f**k and then regular f**k and then fall out and then get married and get divorced and fall in love again. And like that was, it was just clear that that was what they were going to do. You know, like you could put those two people in any universe, in any situation, and they would have the same ridiculous you know, emotional plot with each other, because that's just, it's just who they are, I think.
Yeah, I think as well, like from a listening standpoint, obviously there's that first sort of hinted at relationship, but I think once Mab shows up in the flesh, you're like, oh, okay, so this is it, like, yeah, this is where
here
we're going.
She is.
Like, yeah.
Here she is.
I sent you a picture that was Roger Rabbit and Jessica Rabbit, and I was like, that's them. That's Mab and the presenter. Mm-hmm. You can also substitute it for Kermit and Miss Piggy.
Yeah.
I think there's that kind of and blend of those two, and you've got it, and it's obvious, and there's no other way for it to possibly be.
No, they're written in the stars. What can I say?
Grey Robin, it wants to know... Well, first of all, it says, hey, Dad, which...
Hi, kiddo.
you know, people call you Dad.
People call me Dad. They do.
They do.
I made a post on Tumblr on Father's Day that was like, hey, if your dad sucks or if you just want another one, I'm your dad now. And people really liked that post a lot more than I thought they were going to.
Yep, so you are Dad now. Congratulations on the fatherhood.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm gonna be weird about it. I'm gonna be weird about it, like every dad before me.
Yeah, perfect. That's all we can expect from a dad. So one of your children asks, are there any particular pieces of media that influence Monstrous Agonies, like either things that you actively use to influence you at the time, or maybe listening back to episodes, you're like, oh God, that's really like XYZ, you know?
There were quite a lot of letters, specific letters, that either were consciously riffing on another piece of media, or I realised after. So I didn't realise until I think I was in the middle of recording the troll letter. And I was like, this is a Discworld troll.
Yeah.
That's what that is. And it's so funny because it's such a Discworld troll. So that was one. Whereas like there's Peter Wimsey, Lord Peter Wimsey is in this as a ghost. He was haunting his big collection of books and pestering the poor archival assistant who's trying to restore them. Like that's Wimsey, and I knew it was Wimsey at the time, and it's very obviously Wimsey if you know Wimsey. And like there's a Good Omens letter where one of them is like, we saved the world. I had a sword. It was on fire.
Yes. But no, yeah, I think what's the point in making a fun show if you don't get to slip in all these fun little things that you love?
Yeah. And then I think there's also like a whole raft of things that are always going to be influencing everything that I write. Mm-hmm. Diana Wynne Jones is always going to be in there. Like Ursula Le Guin is always going to be in there. Actually, that whole thing about not wanting the end of Monstrous Agonies to be like, and then the presenter punches the CEO in the face and does a roundhouse kick and it's really cool. And like a lot of that was because growing up a Quaker and growing up raised by a pacifist, it was really important to me that Ursula Le Guin's stuff was like really clearly not about punching evil in the face.
Yeah.
Which when you're a kid trying to read fantasy is like, there's not a lot of children's fantasy books that aren't about punching evil in the face.
No, you're right. Most of them are big battles and...
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I also loved The Hobbit, which obviously does have a big battle, but Bilbo gets bonked on the head and you miss the whole thing, which I just loved. And yeah, so those kinds of things, the kinds of things that you could, like, it's pretty Pratchett-y in a lot of places. And it's like, oh yeah, of course it is. I can't not be. Really.
Well, I know, but it's funny, isn't it? Because I think sometimes people shy away from the idea that something that they love so much is clearly such an influence on their work, but that's all anyone's ever been doing, you know? It's just being influenced and influenced and being made up of all these little things that you love.
Right. And like, if somebody turns around and is like, oh my God, that letter felt like Terry Pratchett wrote it, that's amazing. Like, I'm absolutely like walking on clouds. Like, what a compliment, you know?
Yeah, I think the way that you decided to resolve the conflict at the end of the season was, as you said, kind of going off the back of all those heroes of yours and whatnot, like doing it in a way that is quite definite, but without having to resort to violence or anything. And obviously the big part of that was Station coming to life and chatting on. So Alex, they ask, when did that idea of having Station have its own voice come into play? And also, Alex was one of the voices of Station. So
thank you, Alex.
Said that it was a very moving experience. And I think a lot of people would probably feel the same way who got to be a part of it, feeling that they got to be part of Monstrous Agonies. And obviously that's, as you said, like that collaborative thing with the letters and everything. But I think it's very different. So when did you have that idea? When did you know that's how you wanted to do it?
I think you and I had another one of my panicked, oh God, I don't know where I'm going, video chats. Mm-hmm. But I think I was like 2 weeks in to season three and I didn't know how it was going to end. And I was like, Sophie, help! And I think as soon as we sort of noodled our way to a non-violent ending, mm-hmm. a non-violent confrontation, that also it was important to me that we respected the fact that, like, we aren't not to sort of waffle on, as individuals there is a hard limit on how much we can do.
Yes.
And we've been sold on purpose a lie about how much that is, right? We have been told that we can buy ourselves out of capitalism and that we can watch the right TV shows and make the world a better place and that we can consume our way to goodness. And this is bullshit. This is nonsense. This is a useful lie for the people who are trying to sell us things to consume and a useful lie for the people who are actually responsible. And it's massively unhealthy because we take on this huge, huge pressure and huge responsibility. The things that, like, you know, I was talking to one of our mutual friends a little while ago who was, as we all do regularly, having a bit of a panic about climate change. And I was like, you've got to remember, you are a slightly smarter than average monkey. There is a hard limit to the amount of influence you do have and that you are supposed to have. So concentrate on the things that you can do, not because they're going to save the world, but because they're good for you. It's good for you. It's healthy and emotionally and spiritually healthy for you to live in a way that aligns with your own ideals. Like, that's just it. It's good for you. You'll feel better. And to kind of reassert that we have limited choices in that, and we're all sort of tied into these structures and these systems. It's very, very hard to unpick yourself from. And so I didn't want the end of Monstrous Agonies. I don't mind making a joke about, like, we know the people who cause climate change and you can just kill and eat them. Like, that's funny. But for the finale, I was like, yeah, but like, realistically, like, we're not going to sit there and like, undo the CEO and ApocaCorp and make them not ever have been. But we can go, it is important to choose who you listen to and where you listen and how you spend your time. And you can just not engage with this. Like, you can untangle yourself from this to a degree.
Yeah. And I think the thing that's been proven time and time again is that, like, idiots in the vein of people like the CEO, etc., defeating them in the the marketplace of ideas is all well and good, but like, as you said, not even giving them that platform. You know, the reason why they're all sort of going, debate me, it's because the second they get you in a debate, they can start to tell you what they think. And no, the thing is just to go, no.
Just stop paying attention. Stop giving them airspace. Stop giving them psychological space. You know, go and go for a walk. Just hang out. Just phone a friend. Read a book. Yeah. You know, just do something else. I forgot what the question was.
It's all right. Don't worry. I haven't. The question was basically about when did the idea of giving Station a voice of its own. So I think from that chat that you talked about that we had, we knew that Station was going to get involved at some point. But I think the idea of having the listeners be the voice of Station, that came a little bit later.
I think once I knew that, as soon as I knew Station was going to speak, I wanted it to be the listeners. Mm-hmm. Like that, those two ideas arrived at the same time. I've always liked dropping little hints about Station being a little more sentient than your average radio station. So like the fact that it is Station who chooses the letters, not the presenter, like they're selected by Station. The fact that Station was like, very excited to get Mab invited onto the show, and these little things. And so it felt, I think that felt quite natural and like it had been foreshadowed by someone who knew what was going on, mm-hmm. which is always nice when you stumble across something that is going to look like you planned it.
You're like, oh, I've accidentally seeded this the whole time. Oh, yeah.
Nice. Good on me. Aren't I good?
Yes. Yeah, so obviously that was a lovely victory for you. But Caitlin wants to know, how did you, HR, I don't ever, ever want to put sound effects on anything, Owen, feel about editing that episode, both in terms of the general sound effects and then having to create Station from everyone's voices? She does say that you did a marvellous job with it. But it was...
Thank you, Caitlin.
It was a job that you... It was a rod for your own back, wasn't it, really? You sort of...
Well, weirdly, actually, so the voice of Station was actually just time-consuming. So it took me about 20 minutes tootling around with some of the recordings to figure out how to get it to do what I wanted it to do. Because I knew exactly what I wanted it to sound like. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know how to make it do that. And then... It was time consuming because the response was way bigger than I thought it was going to be. So I had basically taken every individual word and put them into each word was in two different groups. And then everyone who wanted to be Station got given a group, which was a list of words.
Yeah. And you didn't miss any groups whatsoever.
I didn't miss any groups. All of the groups were fine. I accidentally put the word not in four groups instead of two. And then, which word was it, Sophie?
This.
And you know that because I realized I didn't have any recordings for this while I was making it and had to run into all of my group chats and go, hey guys, could you just record yourself saying the word this, please? Thanks. Love you. So the word this is, it's really lovely, actually. It worked out really nicely because it means that this is voiced by you, our friend Jeebs, my best friend Sean, my boyfriend Matthew, and my little mum.
Lovely.
So it actually worked out really nicely that there's just this one word that is like, this one is all of my lovely people. So the actual voice of Station was time consuming just because it was sort of fiddly. So each word that you hear probably took about 15, 20 minutes to do. And because I didn't want to, the reason that I put each word in two different groups was because I didn't want to have the same voices saying the same word over and over, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I ended up with, let's say, 20 people saying Station. And then Station, I think, gets said five different times. So it's five different combinations of those 20.
That it's not going to end up sounding like, you know, an Alexa saying it.
Exactly. And then I also went and got some words out of the bonus episodes. because I tell you what, Alan Bergen can really say not. Like, he really fucking says it from his chest. Never. Yeah, so that was just time consuming and also a bit emotional, because a lot of people sent in really, really lovely messages with theirs as well, which I had not anticipated and did make me feel a bit overwhelmed in a good way. I think the children say verklempt. So the actual hard part of both that episode and the previous seasons, when the CEO turns up and mm-hmm. is like, "Oh, I'm gonna kick your bloody doors in," when yeah, that's what the CEO says.
Oh,
like.
We need a bonus episode of Monstrous Agonies for you to do that accent the whole time.
But those any time where. Because I think I can just about manage to make it sound as if Mab and the presenter are in the same room together, but trying to make it sound like the CEO is also in that room, but they're also not all stood in the same place in the studio, and they're also not all right in front of the microphone, but also you can actually hear them. Actually, the smooching at the end of season 3.
Oh, I was
good smooches.
I was.
You were worried, and you didn't tell me you were worried. I think that's the thing that really struck me is that as soon as that episode went up, you were like, "Oh, I was really worried this kissing was going to sound shit," and I was like, "Well, you didn't tell me that."
Well, yeah, because what good would it have done? It's not that I doubted your ability. It's more a personal thing in that, like,
mm-hmm.
kissing doesn't sound nice.
Kissing doesn't
sound nice. So when I saw, my first reaction was obviously excitement.
Sure.
As a fan of this lovely pairing. But my second reaction was, oh no, I'm going to have to listen to kissing noises. But obviously you have an excellent scene partner and you did a very, very good job because it was fun to listen to. It was very fun.
I think the key thing is that it feels like they're just... And not
Oh, I think it sounds a bit slippy slidey at one point.
Do you think it sounds slippy slidey tongues? Oh, that's very my... I think you need to listen to some more podcasts to hear just how bad kissing can sound.
No, but I think it's good slippy slidey, not like as in I can hear the slurping, but as in there were just some very deeply satisfied little murmurs. Mm.
Yes, the grunts are what makes it.
It implied without me having to hear someone's tongue go on a spin cycle, you know? So
Yeah, that's what mine does. It's like a little propeller.
Just like one of those little caps that little schoolboys wear. Like
exactly. Yeah. Yes, so the hard part is actually making people sound like they're in the same room. And there's lots and lots of things that... when you get the actual sound of it, it doesn't sound like it, you know? Yeah. I think that's one of the things with kissing. The sound of kissing doesn't sound like kissing. If Liz and I had made out in a sound booth, it wouldn't have sounded like Mab and the presenter were smooching. Most of the Mab and the presenter kissing is me kissing my hand.
Perfect.
That was just the easiest. And just being a bit like, "Ooh, wasn't that lovely? Ooh, hand, nobody knows me like you do."
There's quite a few people who both, A, are making a lot of like hero puns on your name, hero's journey, you being their hero, etc. There's a lot of that. So if you've made that joke in your Q&A question, know that I've seen it. And I'm holding space for you, but I'm not going to say it. Okay? So other than making puns about your name, quite a lot of your valued listeners sort of want to know, what have you learnt making the podcast? You know, what were the learning curves? And what do you think is good advice for anyone setting out on their own podcast journey?
Not including the mid-season break, I took as many weeks off in season 3 as I took in season 1 and 2 combined.
And do you think that was healthy, Hero? Do you think that was a good way to do it?
Yeah,
podcast?
I think that might have been the right decision. Mm-hmm. I also had way more delayed episodes that just came out the day after on the Friday, just cause. So that was a big learning curve. of just acknowledging that, like, yeah, I want this to be a professional-ish production, but it's not. Not actually professional, not actually getting paid for this. I am just sitting in a wardrobe making it every week. And it's okay if the schedule gets a little unprofessional because of that.
Well, okay, I'm going to...
No, not unprofessional as a...
No. You said it's now you have to listen to me bop you on the nose because it's not unprofessional. You are a professional, first of all. You literally are. You are. And it's not unprofessional to take a break. You know,
yes.
It would be unprofessional.
No, I agree. But I mean in terms of, like, you know, there are production companies who, first of all, are a production company. And that's not what this is. It's a much smaller scale production. And I think trying to compare myself to large scale productions and be like, well, why don't I have loads of merch? And it's like, because you can't be f***ed, pal. Like,
yeah.
You don't have any merch because you couldn't be asked doing it. Yeah. So my advice for people starting a podcast would be rest more.
Mm-hmm.
And also don't shoot yourself in the foot by being like super ambitious, because, you know, so many of the podcasts that we love as podcast fans are like full cast, like fully realized soundscaped worlds. You know, you kind of, I think in your head, you're like, yeah, everybody says that podcasting has a really low barrier for entry because all you need is a microphone. And it's like, yeah.
But also, quite a lot of people have quite a bit more than a microphone. Quite
yeah.
a lot of people have a big studio and producers
yeah.
and sponsors and money.
Money, and the thing that money gets you is time. So one of the reasons that I've been able to do Monstrous Agony so consistently is because I'm a lazy, work-shy slacker who never has
you
a job.
You are a creature of leisure.
I'm a creature of leisure. I've got a big bung of money that has meant that I don't have to work in the same way that other people have to work, which means that I can make Monstrous Agonies and get some money from my Patreon and build that up and do that every single week, because I haven't had a full-time job the whole time I've been doing it. And that's, you know, it takes time. It certainly does, but it isn't, you know, complicated soundscapes for hour long episodes with a full cast kind of thing. And I think people get really, really excited by the medium and by the possibilities of the medium, and they plan something really, really, really big, and then they don't achieve their goals in the way that they hoped,
mm-hmm.
because they've never done it before, because they're learning, because they're practicing, you know, and then they get frustrated and disheartened and don't make a podcast anymore. And that's really, really sad.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I don't want to sound like I'm putting people off.
No, I don't think you are. I think you're being very practical. And I think the thing is, the barrier is low entry in a lot of regards, in that you are beholden to no one making a podcast. You know, you can just do it and put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thing, you know, it's giving yourself the space to make it the way you need to make it. So like for you, Hero, mm-hmm. you're very... If you aren't working on something, your brain is going brrr and you can't handle it. So yeah. Releasing...
I managed 2 days not
two
working
days,
after...
2 days they had a little holiday after the show finished.
And I was furious.
You were so
one
cross.
Of those 2 days.
So
I was so cross.
Cross.
Having a horrible time.
So I think, yeah, for you, one episode a week for all these years with little breaks in between and whatnot... is doable, it's viable, but for other people out there, you might only be able to do, you know, one episode every 2 weeks or one a month. You have to do it in a way that makes sense for you and that works for mm-hmm. you.
I think also, like, I think the encouraging side of that is, like, you can just try things out. So one of the reasons that I have found Monstrous Agonies, the end of Monstrous Agonies, so deeply, deeply strange emotionally, like, I have not known what I feel about the end of Monstrous Agonies. But part of that is because it's the first big project that I finished since the last big project that I finished. And the last big project that I finished was a novel that I wrote in my early to mid-20s. And I'd worked on it for years, and then I sent it out to agents, and it got signed to an agent, and it got sent out to publishers, and nothing happened. And just nothing. Nobody wanted it. They didn't even hate it enough to reject it. It was just nothing.
Just radio silence.
Just radio silence and the occasional email from my agent saying when he was off for his Christmas break. And I was like, yeah, thanks, pal. That's good to know.
Happy Christmas.
Yeah. And I was like, cool. And that was obviously like upsetting for a lot of reasons. But one of the things that was really, really hard was that I had pinned so many hopes on that book being how I became a writer, you know, and because it got signed to an agent so quickly, it was like, oh my God, it's happening. It's happening now. It's happening now. Mm-hmm. And I'm finally going to be a legitimate writer. And it just didn't. And it didn't in a really underwhelming and kind of long time. It wasn't, I read something somewhere about like heartbreak and about how like muscles doesn't break, it tears. Ooh. And that's, but yeah, it just tore slowly and hurt a lot for a really long time. And in a way that I'm like, I don't know if I'm ever going to write another novel because that sucked. And because of that feeling of having put so many of my emotional eggs into that basket, so that it felt like it going badly or it not going anywhere was like, oh, well, what do I do now? Because I was going to be a novelist and now I'm not. And I think that's something that I think early career creators often do. They think that this is going to be it. That
This is the one thing. Yeah. And everything rides on this one thing. And yeah.
And that can be really awful. Whereas if you go into it with this attitude of play, you know, and you go in and you say like, yeah, I'm going to make a podcast. I'm going to tootle around for a bit and make a podcast, and that seems fun, and we'll see what happens. And yeah, I'm going to write some short stories and send them off to some magazines and see, you know, that sounds like fun. You know, I've never written a haiku. Like, how hard can a sonnet be? Just trying out lots and lots of different things and just trying not to be too precious about one project in particular. So with Monstrous Agonies ending, it's like, I think part of the weirdness has been like a lot of people have been talking about it as this huge, huge thing, this one project. And I'm like, yeah, it was huge for me. Obviously, it's a really big thing. And it's the first big thing that I've had that other people have engaged with on a huge scale. But like, I'm not dying.
I mean, Hero, I'm sorry that this is how you're finding out. No. But you are. Once we finish recording this, that's it. This is actually your
eulogy.
Who's
going to edit the Q&A?
Oh no, not me. Fine, we'll hold off on the death for a bit.
That brings us to the end of part one of the Q&A. Tune in next week for part two. Thanks again to Sophie B for joining me, and a very special thank you to our beautiful volunteer Rachel, who produced the transcript. If you've enjoyed Monstrous Agonies, please consider signing up for a monthly pledge at patreon.com/monstrousagonies or making a one-off donation at ko-fi.com/hrowen. You can also support the show by sharing with your friends and familiars and following us on Tumblr at Monstrous Agonies and on Twitter at monstrous_pod. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 international license. The theme tune is Dakota by Unheard Music Concepts. Thanks for listening, and remember, the real monsters are the friends we made on the way.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.